From a small town in northern Michigan to the mountains of Afghanistan and back, a raw and powerful documentary, Where Soldiers Come From, follows the four-year journey of childhood friends, their families, and their town. At its heart, it's a story about growing up. The film is also an intimate look at the young men who fight our wars, where they come from, and the struggles of their return as they try to fit back into daily routines. With me today by phone are Heather Courtney, producer-director of the documentary, and Dominic Friedianelli, one of the young veterans she follows in the film. Heather Courtney has directed and produced several documentary films, including award winners Letters from the Other Side and Los Trabajadores. She was recently named one of Film Independent's top 10 filmmakers to watch. Letters from the Other Side was the closing night film at the Slam Dance Film Festival in January 2006, and Los Trabajadores won the Audience Award at South by Southwest and the International Documentary Association David Walper Award. Before she started making these documentaries, she spent 8 years writing and photographing for the United Nations and for several refugee and immigrant rights organizations, including the Rwandan refugee camps after the 94 Rwandan genocide. Welcome, Heather Courtney and Dom Friedanelli.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay, let me start off with you, Heather, and tell me, I saw the film in a theater and actually saw you and Dom do a Q&A. Tell us how this film happened, what you set out to do, and then what you found yourself doing.
I'm from the same town that they're from, or you know, the town right next door to where they're from. So what I set out to do in the beginning was to make a film about rural America, because I feel like it's not very well represented in film and television. It tends to be represented in a lot of stereotypes. And so I wanted to tell a more universal story about rural America. And then when I was looking for story ideas, I read about the local National Guard unit. So I went to one of the monthly trainings, and then I started talking to Dominic there. And he was 19 at the time, and he told me that he had joined right after high school because for the money for college, and that these were all his friends standing next to him, and they had all joined together. And so when I first started filming, it was really just a film about this group of friends who were at that point in their life where they're trying to figure out what to do next with their lives. And so in that way, it started as like a coming-of-age film set in a small town, and it was very much a portrait of a place because we didn't know they were going to be deployed for about a year or so. And then I guess about a year into shooting, they found out they were going to be deployed to Afghanistan. And so then it became, you know, something, well, another layer was added to it. So I still think at its heart it's a film about a place and a film about friendship, and still a coming-of-age story but set in the context of war and basically about how, you know, all these friends and their town changed because of the war.
Yeah, I'd say that exactly. In other words, although it's in the title, Where Soldiers Come From, and it certainly is what people, I think, come away with is having been able to get inside of, as I said, the families and the lives of some young soldiers or veterans. But it is really beginning and end. It's just people in a small town. What is the town?
Hancock, Michigan.
Hancock, and the town you live in?
I'm from Houghton, Michigan.
I know you've moved. You've moved away, but Houghton, which is how far away from Hancock?
It's right next door.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Okay, Dominic, let me bring you in. So before we talk about the film, let's talk about how and why did you decide to join the National Guard?
Well, I come from like a mid class. You know, my mom and my dad didn't really make a lot of money, so, and I was the oldest. I really didn't know if they would be able to afford me to go into college or not. So my uncle was in the National Guard unit that I would ultimately end up joining, and I was talking to him, and he's like, he had said, you know, there's a $20,000 signing bonus. They'll pay for your school, if it's a school in Michigan, for free pretty much. So, I mean, it just ended up turning into this opportunity to get, this huge signing bonus, and $20,000 when you're 18 is a lot of money. So, you know, I asked a couple of my friends that weren't really doing anything either, and the money was really enticing, so I got a couple to join with me, and then we came back, and, you know, we had all this money, we were going to school, and then a couple of my other friends ended up seeing that we were doing pretty well, and then they joined, and then, you know, like 9 of us ended up joining all together.
From your high school class or from your circle of friends?
Yeah, pretty much our circle, really close, and like some from my grade and then some from a lower grade or a higher grade.
Mm-hmm. When you ended up getting deployed, about a year later from the time you signed up, a year and a half?
Roughly, yeah, a year and a half.
Yeah. How many of those nine, all of you?
I think two didn't go. One ended up moving to Wyoming, so he didn't come with us, and then one ended up having, like, seizures, so he wasn't allowed to be deployed. So,
you wanted to go to college. You wanted to go to college. Why? What were you going to pursue? Did you know at that point?
I didn't really know. Actually, after I joined, I ended up going to college out of state anyway, so I ended up taking loans out. But it really was kind of dumb, but I actually ended up going back to Michigan and going to art school, so it kind of worked out.
And
I could got 2 degrees. So.
Oh, so yeah, so and the art degree that you got in Michigan, that was paid for?
Yeah, well, yeah, majority of it, like 60%.
So you didn't know, because in the film, it's, you know, your art plays an important part in the film.
Right.
Both, you know, it provides a lot of the visuals of the film, and we see your pursuit, and both before, during, and especially after you return. You didn't know when you graduated from high school that you were going to pursue art?
Not really. In high school, you know, a lot of people tell you that artists don't really make a lot of money. They do it because they love to do it, and that's kind of how I was, but then graphic design kind of came along, and it was an up-and-coming industry with the internet and everything, and a lot of people were getting into that. The majority of the art school is graphic design, so I kind of tested my luck with that and learning the softwares on the computer and stuff.
Okay.
I had no idea I ever wanted to go to art school. You know, I was kind of bottom of my list.
And I'm speaking with Heather Courtney. She's the producer-director of the documentary Where Soldiers Come From, and Dominic Friedianelli, one of the young veterans that she follows in the film. And Where Soldiers Come From airs on PBS nationally November 10th. And you should check your local listings, because schedules sometimes vary. And you can learn more at a website, wheresoldierscomefrom.com. So, Heather, you go back and you went and visited the National Guard training, discovered these young folks, and in the film, you basically end up focused on three. Dom, I believe it's Cole, and Bodie. As a documentarian, how do those three emerge?
Well, as I said, I met Dominic right at the beginning, and, you know, he was a very willing participant in the beginning. I think he liked it. Since he's an artist, he liked the idea of being part of something creative. And I gave him a camera, a small video camera initially that he used, because in the beginning I didn't have any funding for the film, so I could only go up there every once in a while and for the first 9 months or so. So I gave him a small camera, and some of his footage of he and his friends hanging out is in the film. Actually.
Right. No, I saw him as a credited cinematographer.
Yeah, the stuff where they're playing on the rocks and he's climbing that big structure to paint, so things like that. But so he was, I mean, pretty much from the beginning. And then Cole's his best friend, and once I met Cole and Cole's family, especially his mom Mary, which was just, I think, on my second visit to Michigan, pretty much. You know, I knew that he would be somebody worth following, and also he and his family were very open to me as well, to filming. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the access you get, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
And they all were very open to it and very, very welcoming to me in the beginning. So, and then Bodie kind of emerged actually as the story went on, because he was, you know, he's younger, a little bit younger than Dominic and Cole. I mean, they know him since they were kids, but he was a grade or two behind them. And when I first started filming their training, Bodie was still a basic. He wasn't at their trainings. He was, a basic in another state. So, but I did meet him, you know, shortly before they left for Afghanistan. And, you know, then as things started to happen in Afghanistan with Bodie, he became a much larger part of the story.
I see. That makes sense, yeah, having seen mm-hmm. it. So when they get their notice of deployment, was it easy for you to get over there as well and to get embedded and to get access and all of that?
Well, I'd already been filming their trainings for, you know, a year or so. So I had permission from the National Guard in the U.S., and Their commander said that it was fine if I wanted to go to Afghanistan with them and film. So it was just a matter of getting the permission from the U.S. military in Afghanistan. So, I mean, it's just a process you go through like any journalist goes through. You fill out the paperwork, and because I'd already been filming them for so long and they knew it was a very personal story about a few guys in this National Guard unit, they didn't, there was no real reason for them to object my going. And plus that it was already funded by PBS at that point, so I had a letter from PBS as well, which I think helped.
So, let's talk just a little bit. I'm going to come back to you in a sec, Don, but as I asked you that night, I mean, 4 years create this, 4 years of following them, and I don't know whether the editing and post-production added even to that, to fund something like this. I mean, certain documentarians are in that class where they have funding whenever they decide they want to shoot something, but for most it's not, and so it's always a curious question for me. How did this process work? And my guess is that it starts one way, and it moves and it moves. And as you say, you know, at the point at which you have PBS, and I know that might not be funding, but PBS broadcast commitment to finish and so on, these make a difference. But tell a little bit about that process.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just kind of a piece-by-piece effort. You know, when I initially started, I didn't really have any funding, and then I got, like, some small grants so I could buy a camera, and then, you know, and then about a year into filming, or maybe a little bit more than that, I received the funding from, PBS, through ITVS, PBS and CTV funding. And then, you know, I was supposed to, the timeline for the film was much shorter when I initially started, and so the funding from ITVS lasted 2 years, but then I was still shooting, so then I was able to get an artist fellowship and then a grant from Sundance Documentary Fund. And so you just sort of keep applying for funding as you go along, you know. I mean, I was lucky in that I didn't have a crew. I had an editor who was co-editing with me, so I had to pay him, and I had some assistant editors, and every once in a while I'd hire a second camera person in Michigan. But otherwise, you know, I didn't have a huge crew, so those costs are kept down pretty low, relatively low to, like, a shoot that might have a big crew, you know?
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I think I've talked to Laura Poitras a couple of times, and she shoots a lot the same way you do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she does. She does.
Which really allows, I mean, in some sense, A, it allows you to take on longer projects because you're not, you know, you don't have a crowd of people waiting for you to give them a check. But on the other hand, it allows for, I think, a certain kind of rawness and intimacy that you can't get as much when there's a bunch of folks hanging around.
I guess practically it's why I do it, but it's not really the only reason I do it. Yeah, I think I do it because I think having a big crew, it's just hard for people to be themselves.
Exactly.
If there's a huge crew there, and if you're just you and your camera, and the guys have said, and Q&As before that, since it was just me and my camera, it wasn't that big a deal most of the time, you know.
Let me ask Dom, what was it like to you know, suddenly have this person, and I'm going to ask it two ways. One is the suddenly, which is so at first, and then to just have her and this film as part of your life for that long. Describe a little bit what that process was like.
It was kind of just like sudden interviews and, you know, she wasn't really following us that early on. She was just trying to get some interviews and just watching what we were, because most of us were all living together, actually, so she only had to come to one place. But it was just interviews, and then, you know, it all just kind of moved so fast. I introduced her to our family, or I introduced her to my family, and, you know, she'd come for Thanksgiving and Christmas and stuff, and so she really started becoming just a person that we, you know, she was going to be there no matter what. And she got really close with me and Cole's family, so, you know, after a while, I just kind of forgot that the camera would be rolling most of the time, and I just, you know, by the time we got to Afghanistan, I didn't really know it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then having the film part of my life, it's been pretty surreal, I guess. Everyone knows me in town because of the film, and just people around the country, and just getting that exposure has been really eye-opening for me, especially with my art, too. It's crazy that people get to see so much of what I do.
No, I imagine that for a lot of people, who would be doing exactly the kind of art you would, no one would see it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's definitely an opportunity that arose for me as well, which is completely from the film.
Talk a little bit about your families, because it's one thing to show us three young men, but you very much do, I don't know that we see Bodhi's family much, but your family and Cole's family, we really do, you know, we hang out with you. How was that for the rest of your family?
Pretty good. I mean, I think the thing they struggled the most was with interviews, just saying the right thing, you know, because when we first started doing interviews, we were really afraid of, like, saying the wrong thing or something like that, but then we ended up just telling each other that we needed to just say whatever was on our mind, and that's when it really got easier, but they weren't as used to giving interviews. But, you know, my dad, my parents, my mom, and Cole's mom especially, are really close with Heather when she came up. It wasn't always about work. I mean, Heather was going out with them and having dinner and stuff, so and it just all worked out really well for Heather and our family, and you know, they love her, and it's just been awesome, so.
Let me ask again. I'm going to ask Dom, and then I'll come back to you, Heather. What does this film mean to you? Feel really free to talk about the time in Afghanistan and the time in The Return, because the Return is really when we sort of see just what we're doing to young people.
Well, for me, definitely for me, with that in mind, with the changing of young soldiers that do come home, I don't think I would have probably noticed the change I went through without the film.
Interesting.
So I think it's kind of like a tool that we use now to get to see that homecoming and the time after and really reflect on how much our emotions had changed and our outlook on our own lives and other people's lives, with just being so depressed and anxious and stuff like that. So it has really been helping therapeutically to see us all together changing over a course of 4 years. And it helps the families definitely understand what we went through and how much we did change over that time.
I'm just going to fill in a little bit of information for listeners. You all go over to Afghanistan. You're there for 9 months. I believe the deployment is 9 months. Heather's there for 5 of those months.
Yep.
And you all do the same duty, which is that you go out in what are considered safe vehicles to look for improvised explosive devices, IEDs, on the roads ahead of other people. So you're you know, the canary in the coal mine. You're the ones that go out and sometimes run into them or, you know, see something suspicious and defuse them and so on. What was that like?
We were like the big dogs on the base, I guess. People looked at us like we were crazy pretty much all the time, which was a cool feeling because you know that your job's really important when people are letting you go in front of the chow line and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think we were so into doing the job when we were over there, we didn't really realize what we were doing to ourselves with getting blown up and with TBI and PTSD. We really didn't have time to think about that kind of stuff because we were so intrigued with making sure people were safe that were following us or other people that were using the roads. So, I mean, as dangerous as it was a job, and we wanted to do it as best as we could. So it made the time go by fast as well.
Yeah. So for people that don't know, because you are finding these things, your trucks, as protected as they are rocked by explosions. And so what you end up, all three of you, you, Cole, and Bodhi, all end up with some head injury?
Bodhi was the most. He was exposed to upwards of 10 blasts, I believe. 4 to 5 direct that actually hit his truck, and I was hit by like one big one, 150-pound IED that flipped my truck over. Cole was never really exposed to a direct hit, but he had constant indirect hits that, you know, sometimes the bombs would go off before or after the truck went by, but I mean, they're still relatively close to give you a little bit of jolt. So, but yeah, most of our platoon, which is the whole route clearance platoon that we worked with, were pretty much exposed to explosions daily.
And what's the result of that?
A lot of TBI.
And what is TBI? TBI is
traumatic
brain injury. That when your brain gets rocked around your skull, things happen that don't go away when it stops hurting or when the swelling goes down.
Right. It's definitely long term. It's just it's basically a concussion caused by shock waves from the explosion, and not, it's different from a sports concussion, because when you get hit by, like a football player gets hit, he gets hit directly in his head, which shakes the brain. An explosion with the shock wave running through your body and through the truck, it really messes up a lot of your insides, from hearing to you know, brain injuries to like even some of your muscles and stuff. So it's really, it's the new injury. What's the injury of the Afghan and Iraq war, and it's not curable because of the brain. So
in other words, you three, to whatever extent you've suffered this, it doesn't subside. It's basically, as best you know, you'll have the conditions you have now. And are the conditions mood conditions or physical conditions or both?
Definitely a lot of mood, and you know, sometimes you wake up and you just feel like you don't want to do anything, or other days you want to just do everything. It's just a lot of weird things. I mean, like the other day my ears rang for like 10 minutes, and you know, I never had ear ringing prior to going to Afghanistan, so it's pretty awful. Bodhi, you know, he lack of sleep, frequent migraines in different parts of his head. And that was the same with me, but, you know, it gets better once you recover over the years, but there's always probably going to be some minute
effects, yeah. What do you say to someone when, like, someone's saying, I don't know if I want to watch this movie next week when it comes on? What do you say to them?
I think that people should always try to watch something different that, you know, they're not used to watching. You know, get away from modern TV and all this, the crap that's pretty much on, and watch real people do real things, I guess. It's definitely, I don't know, it's just, it's different. I never really watched documentaries prior to meeting Heather. And now, like, me and Bodhi and Cole are, like, pretty much addicted to them. it captures, you know, they're just so intriguing, and they capture people's real lives, and it's, you feel a lot better about yourself watching other people do things than just watching, you know, reality TV, so.
Yeah, I really agree. Dominic, thank you so much for joining us and for being a subject of this film. And finally, Heather, sort of the same question I asked Dom. What you set out to, the film became more than you set out it to be and other than what you set out it to be. And at this point, how do you recommend it?
Well, I mean, people probably are thinking, oh, I don't want to watch another war documentary. But it's not a war documentary at all, actually. It really is a film about these young guys, and you see them and their families change over the course of 4 years. And you also get to know these guys as people, as, you know, regular teenagers before they ever become soldiers. And in that way, it's very different than any of the sort of films that might be put in that category of, you know, a war documentary, because it's really nothing like, you know, Restrepo, which is an amazing film, but it's not a combat war documentary. What it is, it's about people, and it's about how they're all changed by this very faraway war. And you get to see them change from innocent kids to war-weary 23-year-old veterans, and I think that's very rare. I don't think it's really an experience most people get when they watch a film. And it's a really beautiful portrait of rural America. So I just think it's not what you're expecting it to be. It's so much more than that.
Yeah, and I will second that. I was certainly interested in seeing it, and I was interested in seeing it at night when I would get to meet the two of you. But I mean, I echo what you also say, Dom, is that documentaries are unique, and your kind of documentary, which is such an inside look because it has both the intimacy, the accessibility, and the time that you spend, I mean, I can only imagine, and I don't have time to ask you, but I can only imagine the amount of footage that becomes that hour, you know, that hour and a half or so that we end up seeing on the screen. But it really is a chance to get inside rural America, get inside families, get inside young men, and get inside the folks that we send off to war. The film is Where Soldiers Come From. It airs on PBS nationally November 10th. Check local listings. Schedules can vary. And you can learn more at wheresoldierscomefrom.com. www.thebestofafghanistan.com. You can listen to this week's conversation and many others anytime during the week by linking to our podcast. You can sign up to have it delivered to you weekly either at my website or at iTunes. The website is terrencemcnally.net, TerrenceMcNally, terrencemcnally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com. They're the same website. You can also sign up there or by emailing me at TEMcnally, TEMCNally. Keep up the good work.
Thanks.